This is The Rock.
Bill Wax. Welcome to Newsmakers. My guest is former major leaguer Mark DeRosa, who is now the host of MLB Central on the MLB Network. DeRosa learned his craft from the best in the game. Here's what he had to say. Enjoy the podcast.
I have one of the great guys in all of baseball, one of the best ones I ever met. I covered him when he was with the Washington Nationals. His name is Mark DeRosa. He's also the host of MLB Central, which premieres on Monday. And talk about MLB Central, Mark. Thank you for being with me. And this is another year of it for you, correct?
Yeah, this will be the third year. We start April 3rd. Myself, it's hosted by Matt Vasgersian, who obviously everyone has come to know and love. He's unbelievable at calling a baseball game, but he's got such quick wit. Sitting on the couch with us, that he is an unbelievable host. We're lucky to have him. And Lauren Shahadi is also the co-host, who is awesome as well. So I've been super fortunate after retirement 2013 to kind of fall into MLB Network. I loved everything they were about when I went up and kind of moonlighted throughout my career. And then a year into it, almost a year and a half into it, for them to create this morning show and put the three of us together. It's amazing going into our third season now to see how much more comfortable we are with each other, from day one of the first rehearsal we ever did to getting ready to start the third season. Has been a pretty cool maturation on all levels.
That's great. Can you talk about what the first show is going to be like?
Yeah, I mean, obviously opening day. I come at it from a place of playing for eight teams, coast to coast, middle America. I mean, I played everywhere, got a feel for a lot of different organizations and how they do business and how they like to play a certain brand of baseball. I think for me, how I come at it is there's so many good guys in the game, and I think I want people to know that. I want to humanize the players. I don't say anything on the air that I wouldn't say to a guy in the clubhouse. And that's how I've always approached it. I've always gotten positive feedback with the players. As for opening day, I mean, I'm sure we'll make our bold predictions for the year, who's going to win the World Series, who's going to win the MVPs and Manager of the Year and stuff like that. But I focus more on maybe some 10-year-old that's watching, maybe give him a tidbit of something to go out in the garage and practice what these guys are doing, and then try and humanize them. You know, obviously I have to be one thing I learned in TV, you can't toe the line. You got to have an opinion.
Right.
You can't say, well, I think this team is good, but if this happens, it's, you know, no, you have to have an opinion. And I've never had a problem speaking my mind in the clubhouse, or I don't feel like it's, I always feel like if it comes from a good place, you can say it.
Correct. Hey, Mark, you know, I got to tell you, I saw you as a possible coach or manager. And how much do you enjoy being in front of the camera, and do you see yourself back on the field?
I battle with it in my head a lot. Bill, I'll be honest with you, never once, not once, and you can ask my wife, because I confide everything in her, never once did I ever say, oh, I want to be a manager when I retire, or I want to coach, or I never thought about it while I played. I felt like I was a nice sounding board for the players, and I took it as more of a, hey, all the experiences I had and all the guys that helped me along my career, I'm going to give back. I was, I wasn't a can't miss guy coming through the minors or out of college. So I kept my ears open and my head down a lot. Mm-hmm. And I felt like it worked for me. And I felt like I could, be a nice, like I said, a nice sounding board for the players. And that whole leader thing kind of just took legs. It wasn't something I aspired to be. I don't think you can, you know, call yourself a leader or create a captain. I think it kind of happens organically. And that's really how I feel the whole managerial thing kind of sprung. People thought because I had a nice voice in the clubhouse that it would kind of just lead to that. But it was never a passion. I'm definitely interested in it, but I enjoy what I'm doing, man. I really truly do. I get to work for 6 months. I get to stay passionate and stay involved in the game I love. And I get to come home for 6 months and disappear in the winter, and just like I was kind of playing again.
I remember when you were playing, you used to tell us how much being in the Braves organization meant to you. And a lot of those people that you played with are now going to the Hall of Fame. And how do you feel about those players? Smoltz, Chipper Jones will be there. How do you feel about those players?
Well, those are the guys. Those are the guys. When I had a guy come up to me in Toronto, that's you know, I was kind of speaking through osmosis from what I learned from those guys. What I appreciated about the Atlanta Braves, I mean, it probably wasn't the best organization for me to get drafted by because it took forever to kind of crack the code and get to play a little bit because they were just winning division title after division title. But the beauty of what I learned from them is every day you button your jersey, you expect to win. They truly, like, every day we put our uniform on, I felt like we were going to win a ball game. And they were honest with themselves. You know, Smoltz was a guy who took me under his wing early on. I was a guy that was a utility player when I first came up, so I had a lot of time on my hands. He loved to golf. I loved to golf. So Bobby Cox kind of turned a blind eye to me being a position player kind of disappearing and playing golf with Smoltz. So I was lucky and fortunate in that regard. You know, a lot of, took me to a lot of great places and indebted to him for life. Chipper was the guy for me, though, that, you know, if I said, I listened to every coach, I listened to a lot of players that definitely impacted my career. But if I had to put it into like three to five people, he would be one of them. I mean, he took a liking to me at a young age. And, you know, I was impressionable and thirsting for knowledge on how to hit. And, yeah, he showed me the ropes, man. He really did. He showed me how to game plan. He showed me how to watch video. And Bill, he would call me on the road at 11 o'clock in the morning and be like, well, what are you doing today? And I'm like, man, I have nothing. I'm laying in bed watching reruns of, you know, whatever's on. And he's like, let's go to the yard. I got some tee drills I want to run by you. I got some stuff. So, I mean, he was the guy when I scuffled. Throughout my career, I'd call him and he'd just give me something to think about. Or so for him, he's going in first ballot. I actually was thinking about him today, and I was telling my wife, the thing about Chipper was he was iconic with the Southeast. Like, he wore his uniform different. He's not just the Braves. He's like that whole Southeast part of the country just kind of really gravitated towards him, and I felt like he's different. He was a different guy for me.
You talk about,
I really, really trusted in he wasn't so much I'm gonna hit till my hands bleed. It was more like I'm gonna hit effectively with a game plan and a purpose, and I'm gonna get out. That helped me a lot.
You talk about a guy who spoke his mind. Chipper Jones spoke his mind.
Oh yeah, still does.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. You know, you made your name with the Cubs under Lou Piniella. And Piniella, I remember Lou Piniella really loved you. And why did you become that player you were with the Cubs?
Because I met Rudy Jaramillo and Michael Young in 2005 at a time where I was ready to give, you know, I wasn't happy with my career. I was hanging on as a utility guy. I always felt like I was capable of more. I felt like I was untapped. I could do a lot of things in batting practice that I couldn't do in the game. And, you know, signing with Texas in 05 and Rudy kind of pulling me aside. And John Hart at the time was running the team. And I remember having a meeting in spring training with them. And Rudy just basically saying, John, I want this guy on the team, but he's going to stink this entire spring training because we're going to change everything.
Wow.
We're going to break him down to bare bones and build him back up. And I had the time to do it. And I was sitting the bench behind Soriano and Michael Young and Hank Blaylock. And I really just was adding him at a time in my career where I was ready. Like, let's go, man. I'm tired of being sitting the bench and being average.
Right.
And he blew me up. Once you kind of understand what you're capable of, and you start seeing some balls go to some places you've never hit before, and then you incorporate what Chipper taught me with the game planning and the knowledge and the watching video, and it kind of all came together. So when I signed with the Cubs, I was personally, I was ready.
Right.
I felt.
Right. You were really at your peak there. You obviously watch this game still, and who do you like, to win it again? The Cubs? Who do you like the most?
You know, I haven't sat down and put pen to paper, and I know I have to do that soon. But when I keep thinking about it in my head, I got to get around to this, I keep having the Dodgers blink in my brain for some reason. Mm-hmm. And I think it's more of a depth right now.
Right.
Issue where I feel like guys are going to get hurt. It is what it is, and they just seem like they have so much depth. If certain guys go down, that they're going to be able to withstand it. They got the resources in the minor leagues to be able to pull off a monster deal at the deadline if they have to. They have unlimited resources. They're close. They both, mm-hmm. I don't know. I keep going back to them,
mm-hmm.
but. I'm a true believer now, man. I won after 2010. That's why I was so hard on the guys in Washington and felt like we were capable of winning a World Series in 2012. Because after 2010, and this is no knock on that team, that was what I felt, the outside of the pitchers, and granted, we had Lincecum on top of his game at the time and Matt Cain, but I went to the postseason with the Braves, the mm-hmm. Cubs, all these great teams that got bounced in the first round.
Right.
And then we go in with the San Francisco Giants, and Bruce Bochy doesn't even know what lineup he's going to put out from day to day. And we win the whole thing. And I just kept telling myself, like, man, if you get in, it too gets hot at the right time. And that's why I felt like in 2012, like, man, not only is this team so young, they don't even realize what they're doing, but we got just significant talent to just beat people down. So that was one of the tougher trips home after a season.
Do you think the window's closing on the Nationals?
No, I don't think so. I don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, Bryce, you don't know what's going to happen in 2 years, but that's 2 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
Who's to say? I mean, Mr. Lerner and Mike Rizzo have obviously opened up the checkbooks. They're going to have Max Scherzer and Steven Strasburg for the foreseeable future. They're going to have Trey Turner for the foreseeable future. You're going to have there's talent there. There's no question. So, no, I do not see that being the case.
What about in the American League? What do you like?
Well, I thought Boston was a no-brainer until David Price, like I said, now he's dealing. If you had asked me this question a month ago, I would have said, no way, Boston doesn't go to the World Series, but if David Price has got a balky elbow, and now Rick Porcello, even though he was the AL Cy Young Award winner, I mean, his back of his baseball card, he's got to do that again.
Right.
He's darn good, but I don't know if that's, maybe somewhere in the middle of what he's been and what he's becoming.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Cleveland obviously looks super talented. In the West, I really like Houston. I think they're going to pound out some runs. I still think they're a pitcher short.
Mm-hmm.
But again, there's another team that has the necessary resources at the deadline to make a big move. I always look at that because I really, as a player, you can't fool the guys. You can't fool the 25 guys in the locker room.
Right.
You can't fool them. Houston knows what they need. It's just a matter of what they're willing to give up to get it.
Right.
Come deadline time, maybe they make a huge move and they acquire a guy like Chris Archer, and they go into the postseason with McCullers and Archer and Dallas Keuchel, and they become favorites. Or they don't make a move, and the whole air comes out of the room in the clubhouse, and you find yourself getting bounced out in a division series. So I think there's two or three teams in the American League where I just keep going back. I know the Cubs are going to be good, but it's tough to repeat. It's tough to play deep in the season like that. It's tough to expect Kyle Hendricks to have the season again that he had last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough to expect Jake Arrieta to not think about free agency. So, I don't know, man. I keep thinking the Dodgers are going to be tough to beat.
Wow, that's interesting. Mark DeRosa, you're one of the best guys I ever met. And listen, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Bill. We'll